You can start.
I don't want to.
I said you can start. This wasn't a question.
Mine wasn't answering your question, it was a statement of fact. Before we start the show, we want to let you know that this episode contains discussion of mental health issues that could have negative effects on some listeners. If you need more information, check the show notes for details.
Remember, we're not experts, just two teenagers talking about other people's experiences. If you need advice or support, you should talk to a trusted friend or adult. This podcast is not a replacement for professional support.
If you don't feel comfortable talking to someone you know, we have a variety of hotlines and other resources on our website, and you can always reach out to us directly using the contact information in the show notes if you don't know where to start.
In addition, please remember that Benjamin and I are two of many people who care about your well-being.
While we try to ensure that everything we say during the show reflects this, we're only human, and what we say sometimes sounds different from what we mean.
If you feel like something we say in this episode could have negative impacts, please reach out using the contact information in the show notes, and we'll do our best to correct our mistake.
Now, here's the show. Hi, and welcome to the Human Equation Podcast, a show about what it means to be a teenager in the 21st century. I'm Benjamin.
And I'm Darshini.
Today, we'll be hearing from a storyteller who shared a story during our first season.
She's going to be talking about her experience with self-harm and suicidal thoughts.
Tess, take it away.
At the end of freshman year, I started taking Zoloft, which is a medication that helps you with anxiety. I took a pretty low dosage, and literally the next day, I don't know if it was a placebo effect, but I felt a trillion times better. My anxiety had been really, really bad to the point that I was scared to leave the house because I didn't want to have a panic attack in public, and I was afraid to go places because I wanted to just be in my bed all the time because that's the only place I could feel safe and not worry about having a panic attack. So I decided to take that medicine, and it felt really, really good, and I was like, wow, I'm so much better, and I don't have any more anxiety. This year is going to be great. Sophomore year is going to be a great year. And I walked into sophomore year feeling super confident. But all of a sudden, I would just come home after school every day and crash and lay in bed all night. And I was just exhausted. And I couldn't get up and I couldn't bring myself to do my homework. And I just didn't care anymore. I would look at my grades go down because I wasn't doing enough homework. And I would just cry and be like, you know what? I'm worthless. There's no point to my life anymore and I need to die. So I started considering suicide. And then when I figured out that suicide was not an easy thing to do, I got scared. But then I was like, well, I need to get my pain out some way. So I started to cut my arms with razor blades. I don't actually have any scars, but I had like 8 big cuts up and down my arm. And it became like kind of an addiction. Like I love doing it because it felt like a pump of energy. Anyway, one night I had cut my leg instead of my arm, and I just cut my thigh like really bad, and I was laying in bed and I was just texting my friend. I was like, my life isn't worth it anymore. I'm gonna kill myself tonight. And she was like, Tess, I've been telling you over and over again that I care about you and that you know you have many, many friends who care about you. And I've been talking to you about this for months. And I keep telling you, suicide is not the answer. But Tess, you're not listening to me. And I think you need more help than just me and your therapist. And so my mom comes in that night. And I was like, I really need to go to the hospital. I don't feel like I'm in control of my mind. And I feel like I'm going to harm myself. And my mom was like, this is just a stupid game. I don't want you to play with this. You're just trying to miss school. That's what you're trying to do. And I was like, yeah, I have these cuts on my thigh. And I think that's kind of when it became real to her. She was like, okay, this isn't just a game anymore. So she took me to the hospital. I went into the ER and I had a psych evaluation, and they decided to put me in a partial hospitalization program for 2 weeks. I went and I felt a lot better. They changed my medicine because they had decided that the Zoloft was not working for me. Healing is going to take a long, long time for me. But I think what I have to do is realize that I have to work for my healing. I can't just lay here in bed and hopefully one day I'll get better. I got to work on my coping mechanisms and I got to talk to people. I think the biggest thing is, in order to maintain your mental health, you need to talk to people. And it might be hard for you. You might have social anxiety like me. Sometimes people will ask, what do you do if there isn't another person to help you out? And I think my recommendation for that is to find a coping skill or a coping mechanism. There's lots and lots of ways to deal with your pain when no one else is around, but self-harm and suicide are not ways to deal with your pain. They're ways to avoid your pain. And by avoiding your pain, you're never going to get the closure of solving your problems. Suicide doesn't make you stronger, neither does self-harm. It just makes you feel worse about yourself, like you can't even face your own problems.
Human Equation. We'll be right back.
Hi, everyone. We wanted to take a moment to let you know about another great podcast that you might enjoy.
We're always on the lookout for interesting podcasts, and when we found This Teenage Life, we knew it was perfect.
It's created by a group of teenagers who share their own experiences on a variety of topics, including relationships, kindness, and the fears associated with growing up.
We believe the content we put in our show reflects on us, so we've taken the time to listen to This Teenage Life and believe that taking a few minutes to check it out for yourself would be a valuable use of your time.
You can find This Teenage Life wherever you're listening to The Human Equation right now, and we have a link to their website in the show notes.
Happy listening!
Hi guys, it's Darshini. Before the general discussion segment, I wanted to take a moment to thank you for taking the time to listen. If you like the show, we'd appreciate it if you shared it with some friends and maybe even on social media. Additionally, you can follow us on Instagram for the latest updates and more. There's more information in the show notes. And now, back to the show.
This story, when it was originally submitted, was pretty long, and I ended up having to cut a lot of it for time. But one thing that the storyteller did want me to mention is that she, during her junior year, had a similar experience with suicidal thoughts. And that time she approached her mom directly and was able to get more care. But she wanted me to mention that even though it seems like she recovered pretty quickly in the story, that's actually not what happened, and her experience went on for a little longer. Moving on to the general conversation, I think we should start with a general overview of why anxiety is such a problem. Anxiety is human instincts at their most fundamental level. It's an evolutionary response, and it's designed to protect us from certain types of dangers, like physical threats. The problem is, in the modern day and age, the threats that we're faced with don't require a fight or flight response. So that can just cause anxiety to build up, and that can actually become a serious problem.
And it's important to note that there's a difference between types of anxiety, right? You have everyday anxiety and then you have chronic anxiety. So a couple of examples of everyday anxiety would be like if you're worried before a single test or a performance, nerves before something big, right? We've all experienced that before and that's completely fine. But then you have chronic anxiety, which is like constantly worrying that you're going to make a fool of yourself, right? You're going to do something that's going to embarrass you. It's avoiding social situations because you're afraid of something that you don't know is going to happen, or out of the blue panic attacks.
And I think it's important that we all make sure that we're able to recognize the difference between those two, because one of them can become a serious problem.
And I think you should be aware of it, not just so that you can care for your own health and be able to recognize when you're experiencing chronic anxiety or having panic attacks, but also knowing that it exists and understanding why it happens will allow you to sympathize and help other people who are experiencing that. Because I think something that a lot of us do is when someone comes to us with a problem, we kind of instantly judge how big of a problem it is according to our standards. But the thing is, anything, if it's bothering someone else, whether you think it's a big deal or not, it is a problem and it deserves your attention and your respect.
Right. Basic human nature dictates that we don't look at our own problems in a relative sense. We look at them in an absolute sense. If we're experiencing a problem, then we judge the importance of that problem based on how much it impacts us. We don't take the time to compare it to other people's problems. We think about our own problems as the biggest issues in the world, maybe not at the logical level, but at the subconscious level. And that's not something we can control, and that's not something anyone should expect anyone else to control. But we do need that support to get through our own problems, no matter how arbitrarily small they may seem.
And you could see that in Tessa's story as well. You can almost imagine that if her mom hadn't stopped herself from thinking, oh, this is like a small thing, you're making a big deal out of nothing, and sat down to understand what Tess was trying to tell her, things could have gotten a lot worse. And I think it's important to realize that you have great power in just sitting down and listening to someone.
Right. And if the person you're going to about whatever issue you're having either doesn't believe you or doesn't understand the impact of that issue on you, find someone who does. Because there are people who want to help you, and there are people who will take the time to sit down and make sure you're okay.
So I'd like to jump back real quickly to a term that I mentioned earlier when we were talking about anxiety, and that would be a panic attack. And I remember one of my friends, she was talking to me about this the other day, and she was like, I was sitting in my room, and all of a sudden I was sweating, I felt dizzy, I had like trouble breathing, like I lost control of myself. And she didn't know what it was until she went and told someone else, and that person ended up telling her that was a panic attack. And in that moment, had she realized it was a panic attack, perhaps she could have helped herself calm down somehow. And I did some looking into this after she told me about that. And what some people say helps when they realize that they're having a panic attack is just focusing on their breathing, or even if you have the amount of control, writing down what it is that you're feeling anxious about. And that actually helps in general, like whether you're having a panic attack or not. Seeing what it is that you're anxious about on a piece of paper and not in your head lets you let go of whatever that is that you've been thinking about. And long term, talking to a health professional, perhaps a therapist to overcome your fears, getting enough sleep, and also if a health professional ends up recommending it, medications can also be helpful.
And one thing I want to clarify, because I think a lot of people who haven't experienced panic attacks don't understand this, is that one of the reasons that you'll often hear people referring to it as a vicious cycle is because then you start having anxiety about having panic attacks. And that's one of the issues that causes panic attacks to become as bad as they are, is that anxiety about the panic attack itself just adds to what you're feeling.
And jumping back to the part where Tess was talking about her mom not initially believing her, it is so important to believe people when they come up to you and say, I'm having these kind of problems, this has been reoccurring, and I need help. Because the worst thing you could possibly do is not believe that person. And it doesn't even make sense for anyone to not believe that person because this is something that's real. It's based in science. There are hard, cold facts, and it's a physical, chemical process. I don't think that this is a believing the person versus not believing the person thing.
And if you look at the two options, either they're lying or they're not. If they're not lying, then obviously there's something wrong. What they're saying is true and they need help. And even if they are lying about it, they're doing that for a reason. They're doing that because they feel like for some reason they need someone to hear that. They want someone to react to that, which I think is probably a sign of someone reaching out for help. Even if they're not being fully truthful, there's something going on that they need to get help for.
I think a lot of people believe that children don't experience mental health issues, and I include adults and teens in that statement, but the fact is that children definitely can experience mental health issues, and it can often start younger than you think.
So I actually volunteer at a preschool over the summer, and I definitely have seen situations where kids have behavioral issues or are clearly different from what you'd expect from a kid of that age. And often it is related to something at home, something they've experienced.
I think sometimes we might just pass that kind of behavior off as, oh, that kid is just like that. You should stay away from them. They're not a good person. And it's important to note that the symptoms of these issues can appear as character flaws when they're not. And it's important to know that that's a thing so we can differentiate and help people when they're asking for help in a way that isn't obvious.
Right. Most people of any age don't act out unless at some level they're trying to reach out. Because when the brain needs support from others, it tries to get other people's attention. It doesn't necessarily do it in the best way. And oftentimes in doing so, we push other people away. But that's something we all have to be aware of and look out for because those can be the people who need our help the most. And if someone does approach you about these types of thoughts or experiences they're having, then it's important to, first of all, listen to them, recognize that there is an issue there, and help them figure out what next steps are. Because in most cases, you want to redirect that person to other support resources that can provide them with more care. And I think it's important to let them know that you're listening and that you care, but you're not able to provide all of that support. And the reason you're helping them find other resources is because you care and because you want them to be okay.
It's also important to learn and share the information about mental health, not just to help your friend out, but also so you know that kind of information. So if it ever applies to you or a family member or a different friend, you know what to do. And it is so important to treat the person who comes up to you and shares this kind of information with you with the same amount of respect that you would give to anybody.
And if someone approaches you about this stuff, then at some level, whether they're aware of it or not, they are asking for your help. Even if it doesn't seem like they are, even if the way they're acting about it seems like they don't want you to do anything, if they're coming up to you, then at some level, they want your support.
And I think another important thing is follow-up as well. You know, once someone has told you this and you consoled them or comforted them or let them know that you're there or pointed them to someone who could be of better help, just like an occasional call, a text is so helpful. And that's something that a friend recently taught me. I am so bad at contacting people, like staying in touch with people. And that's something I've been trying to work on. And I think it's really important, not just for the person who you end up following up with, but it also just makes you feel good too. It helps your own mental health to stay in touch with people.
Right. And like Tess talked about, recovery is a very long process, and often mental health issues never really go away completely. So it's important to be checking in with that person and making sure they have that form of reaching out if they ever need your support again. I wanted to touch on what she said at the end of her story about how self-harm and suicide aren't methods of dealing with your problems. They're methods of avoiding your problems and how that never really solves anything. And I think that's a really important thought process because there are other ways to deal with those problems, and there are ways that will make things so much better for everyone involved. And I think it's important to recognize that even when it doesn't feel like it, there are ways to get through whatever you're going through, and there are ways to help other people get through whatever they're going through.
You have a lot of people that love you and care about you and will always be there for you. And those are exactly the kind of people that you can look for and go to whenever you're having these kind of issues.
That's it for this episode. Before we go, we wanted to remind you to send us your stories about teenage life.
They can be related to mental health, but they don't have to be. We're particularly interested in technology and social media, but you can share anything.
We also need your feedback so that we can keep improving the show. Reach out using the contact information in the show notes and tell us your thoughts.
Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back soon.
Until then, stay human.
The Human Equation is created by Benjamin and Darshini. Special thanks to Tess for sending us her story for this episode. You can find information about who else contributed to this episode and instructions for submitting your own story, music, or artwork in the show notes.
I have many talents. One of them is screwing up in very impressive ways.